I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Earlier this week, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that the state's congressional map was, quote, clearly, plainly, and palpably unconstitutional, and ordered the legislature to redraw the map by February 9th. That's about 2 weeks away. And if that deadline is not reached, the court said it would redraw the congressional map. Pennsylvania's congressional districts are considered some of the most gerrymandered in the country, including the 7th, which is so convoluted it is now described as looking like Goofy kicking Donald Duck. This is an election year, so this decision could have big political consequences. I should add, and I've said this before, gerrymandering used to be a wonky, sleepy topic, but no more. It's being argued in courts in other states, and it's an issue before the U.S. Supreme Court. We have two guests who are staying with us for the rest of the hour. Joining us by phone is Michael Lee. He serves as senior counsel for the Brennan Center Democracy Program, where his work focuses on redistricting, voting rights, and elections. Michael Lee, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Brian Gordon. He's a member of Concerned Citizens for Democracy and co-counsel on the Ager v. Wolf case that was argued before the federal court in December, lost that case. And Brian Gordon, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, here's the phone number. It's 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times anytime to join our conversation. Michael Lee, let me begin with you and begin with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's ruling this week. How significant was this ruling?
This was a really pretty big blockbuster ruling and perhaps the most important partisan gerrymandering ruling of the recent year. And that's because it has both immediate political consequences in the fact that the map almost certainly will be redrawn. And it also signals that there is perhaps a second front in the war against partisan gerrymandering. Most partisan gerrymandering cases have been in federal court. This is the first state court that has struck down a map for excessive partisanship. And that perhaps signals that regardless of what the U.S. Supreme Court does on the issue, there is a second front that is available to people who are fighting gerrymandering.
Does that mean it can't be appealed because it was ruled based on the state constitution versus the federal law?
Well, everyone's expectation is that GOP lawmakers will try to appeal the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court, making some argument under the Elections Clause and somehow that Pennsylvania state courts can't decide partisan gerrymandering cases because they weren't given that power under the Constitution. Most legal experts think that that's a pretty specious argument and expect it to be rejected. But obviously, because the stakes are so high and because the map will be redrawn and that will cost Republicans some seats, they will probably take the long shot effort and try to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. I expect that will be coming in the next week or so. But again, most people expect that to be shot down because it's a pretty out there argument.
Brian, you argued your case before the federal court. This is obviously a case that was decided by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. How do you see this decision?
We are closer now than we've ever been to ending gerrymandering, both in Pennsylvania and nationally. And what I see as the most exciting part of the decision is really getting down into the weeds of the decision is that they ordered that the districts be redrawn based on neutral objective criteria, which is already exists in the Pennsylvania Constitution under Article 2, Section 16 for drawing state House and state Senate districts. And those criteria are the districts are to be composed of compact and contiguous territory, as nearly equal in population as possible, and they are not permitted. And according, and I have the opinion, the order in front of me, is that the legislature is not permitted to divide any county, city, town, borough, township, or ward, except where necessary to ensure equality of population.
Well, let me pick up on that, because what we're hearing from the legislature and the deadline given to the legislature by the court was February 9th, and if they do that and Wolf signs off on it, then it moves ahead. They're saying, we can't do this. We do not have enough time to redraw the maps. What do you say?
Right. That is also a specious argument. We have on our team a woman named Ann Hanna, who is a Caltech and Georgia Tech computer scientist, physicist, and engineer, who was brilliant, and using these criteria and a few tweaks that were part of the Ager case, the same criteria were part of the Ager remedy, Ann Hanna was able to reproduce a totally neutral map in 20 hours by hand. If done by computer, it could be done in 1 hour. And you have to remember that the biggest delay in creating districts is caused by arguing, or was caused by arguing over who gets which territory. Who gets, you know, the Republicans were arguing amongst themselves as to who has to suffer a greater number of Democrats. In fact, that was a delay in creating the 2011 map, was an argument between Congressman Meehan and Pitts, as I understand it, over who had to take which Democratic voting territory, who had to take Republican voting territory. So to answer your question simply is that this can be done really quickly, and to argue it can't be done in two or three, they need 2 or 3 weeks, is absurd.
Well, let me go back to you, Michael Lee. Do you see it that way? And obviously this is a very partisan issue, and it's been argued, it's being argued here in Pennsylvania, other states as well. Is there an easy fix to this?
Well, there is. I mean, this is, you know, obviously it's a tight deadline if you don't want to upset the primary schedule. The primary occurs in mid-May in Pennsylvania, and people are beginning the process of running for office. But there's plenty of time to fix these maps. So this is something that has happened in states that have had racial gerrymandering and other sorts of problems for a long time. North Carolina, Texas, all have had to redraw their maps and use different maps than they started off the election cycle with. And so this is, although this may be something new for Pennsylvania, it's not new around the country. It's something that's done all the time, and there are lots of experts who can do this. And I would also add, I would be highly surprised if Pennsylvania lawmakers, both Republicans and Democrats, didn't have some maps in their pockets. I mean, people could kind of see this coming. The map was a 13-5 split in favor of Republicans. It's one of the worst maps of the decade, and you know, clearly there were a lot of signals that this map was in trouble. And so it would highly surprise me that prudent people like the Republican operatives and Democratic operatives wouldn't have thoughts about how the map can be redrawn. And earlier in the show, people talked about, you know, perhaps changes to the 7th and things like that. So clearly this is not something that can't be done quickly. This is not something that takes months and months and months. And the sooner they get it done, the less confusion there will be for Pennsylvania voters, and people can go on with the election and start to focus on that.
Michael, let me go back to you, but also, Brian, I want to get your response to this as well. How do you know if something looks gerrymandered? And is it, Michael, that it has that strange look that we keep referring to Goofy and Donald Duck? Is it, and this is true in Pennsylvania, that while Democrats have a registration advantage, I'm not sure how many Democrats actually go to the polls to vote, just 5 out of 18 congressional districts are held by Democrats. Does that tell us, Michael, that this is gerrymandering?
So there are a lot of tools that you can use to diagnose an extreme gerrymander. One of them can be the shapes of districts, although in many parts of the country you can draw very regular-looking districts that nonetheless lock in a very disproportionate and unfair advantage for one party or the other. So, for example, in North Carolina, you have a map right now that if you just looked at it, eyeballed it, it wouldn't necessarily offend you, but it's a safe 10-3 advantage for Republicans. In Pennsylvania, it's a little harder to do that just because of the distribution of voters, which is why you've ended up with some of these funny shapes. And in the case of Pennsylvania, those funny shapes actually do signal that there may be a problem. You can use all kinds of other statistical evidence to look at whether there is an unfair advantage or an effort to entrench one party and to lock its power in for the course of a decade. And, there are any number of measures that have been used in the cases to do that. But there's also other evidence, right? The Pennsylvania process was a very secretive process. The maps weren't actually introduced in the original bill. It just described districts as saying District 1 is a portion of the Commonwealth, which means nothing. Mm. It wasn't until the very day that they voted on it that they introduced the maps, and people were trying to figure out what they actually look like. There's a lot of procedural irregularities that don't suggest to your average person that this is a fair and open and transparent process, and there's probably some gamesmanship going on. And that's, again, confirmed by the shapes of the district, confirmed by the the high asymmetrical results and the 13-5 split in favor of Republicans. So there's lots of things that flag this as an extreme gerrymander.
Brian, do you want to add to that? And is the goal of redistricting or fixing this problem then to create competitive districts? Is that the goal?
Yes, but not exactly. So I first wanted to respond to the notion that the shapes themselves, you can have fairly they can look regular and still be produce sort of perverse results. And I respectfully disagree with Michael Lee about that, is that at least in Pennsylvania, and I think really in every state, if you follow these four rules, which are both in the Pennsylvania Constitution and were really pulled from the 1911 Reapportionment Act, which is a federal law. The 1911 Reapportionment Act. What you'll get is districts that are highly regular. If you honor the boundaries of counties, counties don't follow circuitous routes. And if you add to districts, if you accumulate, smaller counties and you assemble them into a congressional district, which is about 700,000 people, and you accumulate those counties, but you respect county boundaries, and you say we will minimize the number of splits of counties, you will get much more regular shapes, and that will happen in every state. Mm-hmm. And then in the Hanna rule set, which I'll talk about later, if you aggregate once you use counties to create roughly 18 equal districts, and if you then aggregate territory along the boundaries of counties, or you fill in the gaps to create a more compact district, then the districts will truly look more regular. They'll be linear. They won't take odd shapes. Despite the mountainous region in Pennsylvania, the Ridge and Valley region and the Alleghenies, and rivers, you'll have some natural boundaries which are irregular, but you won't have political boundaries. The reason why political boundaries are irregular is every time that we see it, when we compare it to political data, we see Republicans reached across county boundaries or broke up townships, boroughs, neighborhoods in order to capture proven Democratic or Republican voting territory. So I want to go back. It's probably helpful just to let the listeners know what to really understand this and understand mm-hmm. how the rules can fix it. I wanted to go over the three techniques of gerrymandering of what was done.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Brian Gordon, member of Concerned Citizens for Democracy. He's here with us in our Philadelphia studio. And by telephone, Michael Lee serves as senior counsel for the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. And his work focuses on redistricting, voting rights, and elections. And we are talking about the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling earlier this week that congressional maps are unconstitutional, clearly, plainly, and palpably. Those are quotes, or that is a quote from their ruling. And I do have a bunch of people that want to join the conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Brian, hold on to that thought, because let me get some callers in, and it might fit exactly with some of the questions that they have. We have Andrew from Morrisville joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
Greetings, guests.
Greetings.
I'm a voter in Pennsylvania, and I feel that gerrymandering has abridged my right to vote and taken the power of the elections away. And I think the only solution to solve gerrymandering was to keep legislators out of the redistricting process. And I hope the courts do the redistricting and not the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, for calling in. And the court did say that if the legislature, Brian, cannot come up with maps that they think are better than what we have now, that they'll do the work themselves. Let me give you a chance to respond, and then Michael will get you back in on the conversation.
Sure. I agree. And in fact, the court said here are these guidelines, that your districts have to be compact. You prohibit unnecessary splitting of counties and municipalities. You prohibit the use. They didn't prohibit the use of data, but they said that districts had to be equal in population and contiguous. Those are the two federal rules and the only rules that the Republicans observed in creating these maps. But it's those two other rules. It's districts which are compact and don't break political subdivisions that mm-hmm. almost make it impossible or very difficult to gerrymander. So even if we had the court draw the map, even if we had a neutral redistricting commission, it's probably going to be better just by dint of the fact that they would look for objective standards, but the standards are also necessary. in order to assure that we have fair districts. So just to let you know that when we did the map based on these four principles that the Supreme Court laid out, it resulted in a 9-9 map in which there were five highly Republican districts, five highly Democratic districts and cities, as you would imagine, the Republican districts were in rural areas. But what happened is you ungerrymander the districts in the suburbs, in suburban areas, and in areas like in the northeastern part of the state that are sort of mixed between Republicans and Democratic voting areas.
So those were, the, in a sense, the competitive districts that were created.
So the caller is partly right, is we should have a sort of a neutral – it's great to have a neutral group doing this rather than doing personal gerrymanders and favoring your own party. But we also need rules and objective standards.
Michael, let me go back to you because we vote for judges in Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court has five Democrats and two Republicans. If the court, first of all, do you think it would it be legal for the court to redraw these maps? And if they did, would that create another set of problems?
Well, it's not uncommon when lawmakers deadlock and they can't pass a map, which seems likely perhaps in Pennsylvania, given that the legislature is controlled by Republicans, but Pennsylvania has a Democratic governor, and any redistricting map would have to pass the legislature and then be signed by the governor. It's not uncommon in situations like that for a court to draw a map. It oftentimes does so with the guidance of a special master. That is not what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, at least now, has set out to do, and it's rather taking submissions from the parties and looking at it, and it will make a decision. But you know, it's always obviously better for somebody other than the judiciary to draw maps, but sometimes that is necessary in order to keep the election schedule on track. And in this case, you know, it certainly does look like there's likely to be a deadlock between the legislature and the governor in Pennsylvania.
Brian, about a minute before we have to take our break here, how many other states are grappling with gerrymandering or redistricting?
So right now, there are eight states that have ongoing redistricting litigation. Some are claims about the Voting Rights Act or racial gerrymandering claims. There are partisan gerrymandering claims right now involving Wisconsin, Maryland, and North Carolina. The Wisconsin and Maryland cases are at the U.S. Supreme Court. The North Carolina case could join them shortly. This, in other words, could be a really big year for partisan gerrymandering and redistricting overall.
And in Pennsylvania, did the court say anything about racial gerrymandering?
They did not.
No,
they
that was not an issue in the court, yeah.
It was more partisan gerrymandering, that's what they saw?
Yeah, it was a statewide effort at gerrymandering. And I want the listeners to understand that what the Republicans did, which was so egregious, is that they literally had a map room in the Capitol, and they invited only members of the Republican caucus into the room to help design the districts. And they invited Republican members of Congress into the room to design their own congressional districts. And what they did, the techniques they used is they packed the Democrats into five districts across the state. They split the remaining concentrations of Democrats, and then they distributed Republican votes efficiently to guarantee the 13 wins for Republicans and five wins for Democrats.
We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation talking about the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling earlier this week that the current congressional map violates the state constitution. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Brian Gordon here in our Philadelphia studio. He's a member of Concerned Citizens for Democracy and was co-counsel on the Ager v. Wolf case that was argued before the federal court in December, having to do with gerrymandering and redistricting, lost that case. But earlier this week, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did rule that the current congressional map was clearly, plainly, and palpably a violation of the state constitution. Michael Lee joining us by telephone, again, senior counsel for the Brennan Center's Democracy Program, working on focusing redistricting, voting rights, and elections. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Dave from Drescher to join us. Hi, Dave. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm kind of torn. I mean, on one hand, I would love to live in a more competitive district. I am in a Philadelphia suburb. But on the other hand, I don't know if I'd like to live in an area where exactly half my constituents, fellow constituents, disagree with me politically. I just think that'll add to the acrimony that really already exists in the suburbs politically.
Dave, you, no, it's a great comment. You raise such an important question. Michael Lee, what do you say back to Dave? He's saying, you know, I don't like gerrymandering, but nonetheless, I like living with people who think like me and vote like me.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, he may be in a district right now where that is in fact the case or not the case. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, what a lot of people want out of redistricting is for districts to be drawn under fair, neutral principles. And those could be following county lines or political subdivisions. They could be involving preserving communities of interest so that the communities that, you know, have things in common are joined together. And so there are lots of ways to sort of do it. In general, you know, a goal probably isn't trying to make every district competitive, right? Because trying to make every district competitive is itself a form of gerrymandering. But okay. A lot of times, if you just sort of naturally draw districts that keep communities together, you do end up with increased competition. And that's what we saw in California, where a commission drew maps in 2011. And even though the commission wasn't setting out to make districts more competitive, it just sort of kept communities together. It ended up tripling the number of competitive districts. So sometimes that's a benefit that comes out of that. Usually it's probably not a goal if you're sort of designing rules for redistricting is trying to make districts competitive. So
let me read an email from Donna. I'll put this to you, Brian.
Marty, if I can just clarify one thing. Sure, I just wanted to clarify one issue, and that is that the Ager case lost in the three-judge panel on a 2-1 decision in which two Republican judges voted in our favor, and that we appealed last Thursday to the U.S. Supreme Court. So okay. The case is very much alive.
Okay,
and we have a chance to advance that similar structured rule set to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is an important part of the conversation. And then the other thing, and the Republicans have cross-appealed yesterday to the U.S. Supreme Court in the Ager case. So our case is not, you know.
Might have lost, but it's still alive.
It would have been appealed anyway. We would have been happier to be 2-1 or 3-0 in our favor, but the case is still very much active. And to answer the caller's question is that we're one country. And we have to, and we live together and work together. And what the Republicans have done, which I don't think the caller would really want, is to use a scalpel, like Goofy's ears, to separate Republican voting territory from Democratic voting territory, so we vote separately. Because if we vote separately, what it does is it's resulted in the polarization of Congress. Because if you're a Republican in a Republican-designed district, you really only need to appeal to your party leaders and your Republican base to win. Similarly, with a Democratic district, if you're Dwight Evans and you're 91% Democratic territory, you really don't have to listen much to the other side or compromise. And that's a horrible result for democracy.
Let me read an email from Don, and this speaks directly to that. Will the redrawing of congressional districts address the first congressional district being redrawn to have white representatives from Philadelphia? And the first is largely part of Philadelphia. I believe, I'm not sure whose district that actually is, but thinking about Philadelphia, thinking about Pittsburgh, some of these more urban areas, the more rural areas probably are more Republican. Urban areas are probably more Democrat. Do they get touched if we redistrict? I'm looking at you, Brian.
They would. Philadelphia has 2.1 times the population of a single congressional district, about 706,000 people. And Congressman Brady is in the first district. Dwight Evans is in the second. And a piece of Philadelphia is in the 13th, which is Congressman Boyle.
Right.
So at the end of your Democratic neutral standards, you would result in a map with these blocks of, you know, sort of blocks of votes. And you'd have to make one adjustment at the end to make sure that you had, under the Voting Rights Act, a minority-majority district. That's a minor consideration in the grand scheme of things. Philadelphia is going to wind up with two districts. And the question is, where would you draw lines? 2.1. And then a tenth of a district is probably going to be added under these set of rules to Delaware County or to Bucks County or Montgomery County. Well, it would be Bucks County because Montgomery County already has too many people for one district.
Michael, can we say that gerrymandering reduces voter turnout?
Well, you know, it certainly makes people cynical. When I go around the country, you know, you hear over and over again, and survey data confirms this, that people say, like, my vote doesn't matter, right? They've already rigged the election. They've already determined what the result is, so why does it matter? And so, you know, there's absolutely no question that, you know, there is an impact. Exactly what it is a little difficult to quantify, and there are, of course, many variables that come in there, but certainly gerrymandering fuels more importantly, a lack of a transparent process with clear rules and where people kind of trust the system, makes people think that the electoral process is somebody's put their thumb on the scale and try to determine results.
Let me get Meredith calling us from Clifton Heights to join our conversation. Hi, Meredith. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I wanted to say, obviously, this ruling is exciting to me. I'm someone who lives in the 7th Congressional District. But I wanted to comment on the fact that it doesn't change the process. And I know one of your guests said that it does enforce certain principles, and that's certainly important. But this means we still will have legislators drawing their own maps, which is obviously a conflict of interest. And so I would love it if we could hear a little bit about the legislation that's already in the Pennsylvania House and Senate. There's SB 22 and HB 722 that set up an independent commission to draw these maps. And in particular, also, the ruling only affects the federal congressional district maps and not the state assembly maps, which of course are also subject to gerrymandering.
Sure, sure. And it just underscores how complicated it is. Meredith, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Brian, if I can toss that back to you, and we did a program not so long ago about legislative reforms and having a commission that would draw the map. I think it requires the legislature passing this on two consecutive sessions, and then it would be a ballot initiative going before the people. Do you see that as a solution?
Yes. I think the caller's right. I think that that if you had a citizens' commission composed, or a citizens and politicians' commission together, composed of you know, as neutral as possible, a group of people, then it would certainly increase the chances that you would have fair districts that follow traditional boundaries. And when I say this traditional boundaries, it's not a new idea. I have in front of me, and it's on the state's website, the congressional districts in the last century, and in the 1920 map, 1930 map, 1940 map, 1950s map, the 72 map in particular, these are compact districts. So to answer the caller's question is yes, a neutral commission would really help the situation, but even a neutral commission would need structure and guidelines.
Michael, I mean, is this a matter of conflict of interest, as Meredith said? And both you and Brian talk about just how secretive and the lack of transparency that the legislature has engaged in, which really makes it almost impossible for the public to see what's going on. Should we move in the favor of some kind of independent counsel or commission?
Well, there is certainly a growing body of evidence that commissions work, and the evidence actually suggests that even commissions that aren't perfectly set up do much better at drawing fairer maps, that they don't have these sort of dramatic asymmetries and imbalances that Pennsylvania's 13-5 map does. And so even a flawed commission does better at that. A split-control legislature does better. A court-drawn map does better. But there are even, if you have a much better structured commission like in California, you can really incentivize a lot of negotiation and compromise and come up with a lot of fairness. So, you know, in California, there are Democrats, Republicans, and independents on the commission. That's the proposal that's being made in Pennsylvania as well. So independents get a voice that they don't currently have in the legislature. And to approve a map, Democrats, Republicans, and independents all have to approve the map. And so that fosters negotiation because Democrats can't team up with independents to screw Republicans, or Republicans and independents can't team up to screw Democrats. And so it fosters negotiation. There are also really strong transparency requirements in the California proposal, just as there are in the Pennsylvania proposal. You know, overall, we would say the Pennsylvania proposals are among the strongest in the country, in fact, and that's why they've attracted 103 or perhaps even more now co-sponsors, including 30-something Republicans. And so, you know, there's a lot of bipartisan support that's not it's really sort of extraordinary. It hasn't gotten a hearing in the legislature yet because the powers that be are blocking it, but you know, it has strong bipartisan support not only among people but among lawmakers.
And the powers that be, just to be clear, are Republican leadership. Let me read a tweet speaking exactly to what you just said there, Michael. Is it possible to model California Citizens Redistricting Commission awarded top 2017 Harvard Public Engagement in Government Award? And it seems that both of you feel as if that's a good model to think about. A comment from Ben in Quakertown. He says, open primaries do away with gerrymandering. And I guess an open primary, Brian, might be defined a number of different ways. Do you see the possibility of an open primary?
I don't think that's true. I think that open primaries suggest that people can – Republicans can vote for Democrats. Democrats can vote for Republicans. It's an interesting idea, but it doesn't change the shape of a district. So if you have a general election in which you have a Republican and Democrat running against each other, but you have a contorted district where the territory is stretched westward into the state by 100 miles in order to make it Republican leaning, then you really have an unfair race to begin with. So you're going to it's like having a football game. Could you imagine, you know, imagine every time the ball was kicked into the end zone, the Eagles started on the 20, but the Patriots got to start on the 40-yard line in order to make the run to the end zone.
I like that idea, by the way, but that's a totally separate.
No, I said the Patriots start on the 40. Right. So imagine the Patriots started further, closer to the goal.
Yes.
And that's what gerrymandering does. So it tilts the map. So open primaries are fine, but it's the districts. It's basically designing districts with the aid of computers in order to generate these really contorted maps. I just wanted to show you an exhibit that went into.
And we are on the radio, just so you know.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
I realize it. But exhibit that went into the case where that the Republicans are using. It's an example of the program they're using. And in the upper left hand corner, you can see that in real time they were able to move the boundaries of the congressional districts and get a reading in based on their computer a reading of the Republican advantage and Democrat advantage of all 18 districts with every movement of every line of the map.
Well, and that picks up on something, Michael, that people may not know, just how much data people, meaning, I guess, what, members of legislatures, have about how people vote. What do they know about us?
Well, that is absolutely right, and it's something that's only getting more and more powerful. We've traditionally been able to draw districts only based on things like electoral returns and things like that, but, you know, if you take a precinct or a census block, you may know that it votes 50-50 Democrat, Republican, but you don't know where the Democrats are and you don't know where the Republicans are unless you have on-the-ground knowledge. But increasingly, using big data and the sort of things that marketers and political campaigns use, we're able to predict how each house in a census block is likely to vote, and that makes it possible to artfully slice and dice voters to produce very exact results that stick. And that's the key thing, is that these results stick. Other than in some sort of tsunami wave election, you would expect Pennsylvania's map to remain 13-5 for the whole of the decade, and that's the problem. And this data is only getting more and more powerful based on things like Google searches, what kind of car you drive, your credit score. All of this data is making it even more possible to be predictive of how voters will vote in an election. And if courts don't step in and do something, then in 2021, the tools that MapDrawers will have at their disposal will be something that would have seemed like fantasy in 2011.
Wow. Let me read some emails here. One from Tim in Millville. One tidbit: when I was growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, the Democrats ruled the House solidly. I never heard about gerrymandering then. An email from Todd: when I was growing up, almost the same thing in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The Democrats ruled the House. Oh, never heard of people on this issue. And it is true, I think, and we're almost out of time here, Brian, is that and I mentioned this on the show a decade or so ago, people didn't talk about gerrymandering. And now, you know, it's the hot topic, which I think is a good thing. But What do you think explains that? And we have about 12 seconds.
Well, I think what happened was that in the, if you look at the 1972 map, the 62 map, the, you know, even the 82 map, there was a lot more respect for political subdivisions, for counties and municipalities. And if you look at the 72 map, which is on the state website, you'll see that it really avoided any breaks of counties except to add a township here and there in order to equalize the districts. And that makes a difference. That's where people choose to live. That's where they pool their taxes in order to solve problems. And that was respected in the past, and it's no longer respected.
Well, to be continued. Brian Gordon, thank you for coming in on to join us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Member of the Concerned Citizens for Democracy, Michael Lee, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And he serves as senior counsel for the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. And thank you for those phone calls and comments as well. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us.